Now on Saturday Extra, we're going to talk about love and the sort of love that comes by chance, not by design. Our guide through this enticing topic, not one we often do on Saturday Extra, is none other than the prolific writer Alexander McCall-Smith, who's wrapping up yet another visit to Australia, a nation he's become rather more fond of in recent years, setting some of his writing here, no less, and us Australians, I think he's become rather fond of too. Alexander's latest book is Chance Developments, Unexpected Love Stories, a series of imagined stories based around old, unidentified photographs. And I'm delighted to welcome him back. Good morning, Alexander.
Good morning, and thank you very much.
Now, he has a shocking laryngitis. You've been around so much, you see. What, can you just barely speak?
Well, no, I can speak. I sound a little bit like Louis Armstrong.
And, no, you know, don't, maybe, but anyway.
Maybe it'd be a good thing if it stays this way.
Look, before we get to the book and the love stories it documents, just this very quickly, this love for Australia. We love being told we're not bad. Because I've seen you now talk to a couple of people, and I was a little surprised that Tony Jones slightly smiled on Late Line at your discussion about the wind through the trees of the eucalypts. And he sort of said, we're now supposed to believe. I thought, gosh, every Australian knows about the wind through the eucalypts, don't they? I was surprised at his scepticism.
Well, it's something which I love very much indeed. As a little boy, I had eucalyptus trees outside my window, and I remember the sound that the wind makes.
Where was this?
That was in Zimbabwe.
In Zimbabwe.
And I remember that sound, and I think it's a very evocative sound. I like the wind in other trees as well, but in eucalyptus trees, it's a very nice sound, and I often mention it in my books, in my number one ladies' detective agency books. Precious Ramotswe often listens to that as well, so it's a nice sound.
It's a glorious sound. Yeah, I absolutely adore it. I heard it again the other day when I was out filming and I was in a spot that was just completely much less developed than usual, and it was glorious. So, tell us the story behind this little book.
Well, it has a rather odd beginning. I had written a book about Edinburgh for the Scottish Commission on Historical and Ancient Monuments. They wanted a book about Edinburgh featuring old photographs of the city. And after I'd done that, I said, have you got photographs of people doing things in the past, black and white photographs, that you don't know who these people are, what they're doing, why they're there, and where they are? And they said yes, and they gave me five or six of these photographs, and I created stories around them, and it was a wonderful exercise. I really loved doing it. And in each of these photographs, I was able to see a love affair in the background between the people.
But why did you choose to do that? Because knowing you, you could have done anything, so why did you choose that?
Well, it just, in a sense, half your work is done when you're talking about a photograph. Because there are the characters, and there's the situation. And I find that that just suggests a whole hinterland of stories behind. And so I think it's a very, very pleasant thing to do as a writer.
I suppose it's the reflecting on love. Like, if you think about love is, well, sex and love and romance are talked about constantly. And there's a part in your book where you actually do have one of your imaginations, and it's beautiful. It says, it's angels in Italy. There was no recrimination in her tone. This is one of your prime people. To spend your life with the wrong person, that must be a terrible thing, you know. You're with one person and you want to be with another. And you know that we only have one shot at life, one chance, and that you've wasted yours. This was actually a marriage that had resulted from a man who wasn't able to marry his first love. Now, I read that and I thought, that's a very Western view, though, I think.
Yes.
That, you know, lots of other cultures have a vastly more pragmatic view about the links one makes with people, and that romance comes gradually, and it's sort of duty, and it does become genuine love. So, did you reflect on that?
Well, I have reflected on that. I don't know if I reflected on that in that actual story, but I agree with you. I think that there are all sorts of love, and there is a sort of love which grows gradually over the years, and it may not be like a bolt from the blue at the beginning, but you become very fond of somebody and you stay with them for decades and indeed possibly for the rest of your life, and that's very touching when you see that sort of affection. But what I was thinking about in that particular story was people reflecting on circumstances where they have clearly made the wrong choice, or there's been someone else in the background. And that's, I think, a very poignant situation where you have an unrequited affection for somebody, or an undeclared affection. And in these stories, in this particular book, there's quite a bit of that, because a straightforward, successful love story is a bit boring. If A meets B...
Whatever that is, by the way, a straightforward, successful love story.
Well, I suppose there are people who bump into somebody and say, oh, I think you're great. And the person says, oh, I think you're great too. And they walk off into the sunset. Now, there's very little work for a novelist there.
What about the ambiguity of long-term love? Now, over the years, I think one of the things, and it's very interesting to see that movie 45, which is on at the moment, looking at long-term love,
right,
with Charlotte Rampling and Tom Courtney. And I had a great line. In every long-term relationship, there is immense ambiguity.
Yes.
And long-term relationships are a struggle, aren't they? Now, you don't go into that
a bit.
You do, but you don't dwell on that, does it?
I think in the final story in this collection, which is the story which is set in Australia, we have two people who meet one another when they're young, and then the Second World War happens, and he's in Malaysia, he's taken a prisoner, and he's in a prisoner of war camp, and that's a big interruption in their relationship. He comes back to Australia. He's so ashamed of his condition that he feels he can't go and see her. He eventually gets sufficiently well to go and see her. And then things don't work out terribly well. And that story looks at another aspect of love, which is where somebody maintains loyalty and affection for somebody who actually isn't really worthy of it, or doesn't appear to be worthy of it. Mm. Somerset Maugham explored that in his book, The Painted Veil.
He certainly did.
Where you had a man who was a very principled, good man, and a woman who perhaps wasn't worthy of him. And that's, I think, a very interesting side to it. In that particular story, well, I don't want to give the outcome, but in a way, we see loyalty repaid at the end of the day. And that's something which is very important in many relationships, is this long-term loyalty, and it's very touching.
Yes, it is. It absolutely is. I suppose, actually, it's that ambivalence, I think I really meant, rather than ambiguity, ambivalence of long-term relationships, which, you know, surely has to be part of the, as we're living longer, in fact, the divorce rate is dropping. If it's not going up exponentially.
Oh, really?
No, it's
right.
Not. It's right. When you actually drill down deep, it's not. Mm. And there's quite a lot of discussions about precisely that. Might that be your next? I could just see you really delving into that difficult area more.
Possibly. What I would like to do is to write another book using photographs. I love that so much. So maybe I could do a book about dysfunctional relationships from dysfunctional photographs.
What is it about photographs? Is it a triggers some...
Yes.
Creative process?
Well, I love these old black and white photographs, and we've all got them, you know. Most families have got an album somewhere where there are these old photographs. Now, with albums, you may have Auntie So-and-so written underneath the photograph, so you know that was Auntie So-and-so. But you may also have them in a biscuit tin. And lots of people have them in a biscuit tin. And, of course, those photographs become really orphaned in the sense that nobody has written on the back of them who these people are. And I find those really very poignant, those photographs, because you look at them, and if they're of a certain vintage, you say to yourself, well, all these people are now dead. Who were they? What was their life like? Mm-hmm. And if you think of the history that these people saw, let's say that you have a photograph which was taken in the 1930s, and you think at that time they didn't know what was ahead of them. And it's quite a thought. So I find these photographs absolutely fascinating.
Mm. You do have a little, just got a couple of minutes, in your, I think it's again in Angels in Italy, that the one that actually made the biggest impact on me that we've already referred to. You do ask the question out loud, again, your character asks, wonders whether we know a lot more about unhappiness today than happiness. Are we happier today because we know a lot more than we knew then? Are we happier because Freud came along and showed us why we were making ourselves unhappy? Are we happier because of the sexual revolution? I mean, you obviously ponder this.
Yes, I think happiness is one of the big, big questions, isn't it? It's at the heart of, I suppose, one's philosophy of life. How do we achieve happiness? I suppose in the world in which we live today, people feel that happiness will be delivered immediately on a plate, and I'm afraid that that's not the case. The issue as to whether we're happier than we were in the past, I think in many respects we are. Freud helped in that respect.
I agree. Alexander McCall-Smith, it's lovely to talk to you again. Thank you very much for being with us. Good luck with The Voice.
Thank you very much.
I'm Geraldine Doogue. I do hope you can join me at the same time next week or online via the RN website.